I'm Mike Porter from Golden Streets of Paradise in Branson, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian, sitting in for Travis this week, who's occupied talking to one of your former bandmates right now as we speak. He's talking to Brian Gray.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We'll get to that.
Brian.
Yeah. So we're hanging out with Mike Porter, Gold Streets of Paradise. This is the new band. Yep. Most people know you from Branson.
Yep.
So...
Wait, did you say Branson?
Is it? Yeah, you help me out with the pronunciation.
All right. Go ahead. It's Branson.
Branson.
T goes before the S.
Okay.
Yeah, we just figured we'd pick the hardest name to remember, spell, or say, and go with it. So, it's actually the name of the street I grew up on. So we kind of picked that early on, and it stuck. So, Branson.
Branson.
Yeah.
All right, fantastic. I'll fix that later. All right. So are you originally from Cleveland?
Yeah, yeah. Born and raised.
Your music resume is long, so I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about your childhood. But
right, no, that's yeah. good. Childhood, there's not much to talk about there. It's pretty, pretty basic. All good.
All good.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to talk about it? I mean, there's really not a lot to tell.
No, I'm more curious about, what got you into music. Let's start with... the music side of what got you there.
Oh, man, I don't know. My dad was in bands when I was a kid.
Okay.
He was a bass player. So there's always a guitar, bass guitar, saxophone around the house. And I got the bug pretty early. Let's see. I started getting into music probably when I was 12, 13, liking bands and stuff. And then got my first guitar when I was about 13, 14, and just sit in my room and play along the metal tapes, and that was it. Been playing music ever since. So,
was metal your first love?
I don't know about metal. I mean, I was a kid. My parents were pretty hardcore, Christian music. So I think some of the first stuff that I remember listening to was, I'm probably going to say some stuff that nobody's ever heard of. I remember being 12 and listening to Rez Band. Mean anything to you?
Oh yeah.
Thinking, man, it was so cool. But I mean, I was a kid, and it just I listened to those records a lot. And, Undercover, all those really early kind of alt Christian bands, and then around the time I was 14, I just kind of was Ramones, Circle Jerks, Violent Femmes, that kind of stuff, that's kind of what I started listening to after that. So
awesome. So talk to me about getting into bands. Let's just jump into 6 Feet Deep, and because you guys were pretty early in that Christian hardcore scene, if you will.
Yeah, Let's see. We actually started in 91. We got, like, the band that became 6 Feet Deep. We got together in 91.
Did you have a name before 6 Feet Deep?
You
got bad band names? We love bad band names.
We didn't.
No.
6 Feet Deep never had a bad one. Had anything before 6 Feet Deep. But I was in bands previous to that because I graduated high school in 90.
Okay.
So we didn't form that band until after we were all out of high school. But in high school, like when I was real young, the first band I put together, we were called War Club.
War Club.
And I think, I don't know, we referenced that out of the Old Testament or something. I don't even remember. And I have cassettes of old demos of that stuff. It's pretty hilarious. And then after that, we put this band together called Standard Issue. And Tom, the drummer from 6 Feet Deep, played bass on that band. And we did that for a lot of years, like all through high school, just playing parties and shows around town. And then, let's see, I was in a band later called Rise, pretty bad. And then after high school, when we put this band together, we didn't even know what we were doing. Like when 6 Feet Deep first got together, it was really weird because Matt on bass, Tom on drums, I was playing guitar and singing, and Mike Schaefer was playing guitar. And we were like, we were just kind of learning how to play music with each other. Like, I remember we were doing covers, like just like writing like little songs. And we didn't really evolve into what we were going to become until we started thinking about making a demo. And then things got a little more precise, you know, with the music. So I kind of forgot the original question.
Yeah, it was about forming 6 Feet Deep. So you're good. Struggle came out in 94.
Did it?
That's what Wikipedia says.
Maybe. Okay. I was thinking 93.
93?
But
that could be.
But that could have been like recording and everything, you know, 93. So, because I think the second record came out in 95. Yeah, so right in there. We got together in 91. I think it was towards the end of the year. And then in 92, we recorded like a 3-song demo. You know, pooled all our money together. And this was a weird time because we, all four of us just lived in an apartment together. And we were just like, ate, sleep. We would, you know, just everything was the band, like all the time, constantly talking about it and doing it, practicing and everything like that. So, 92, we recorded a 3-song demo and that's what we kind of like sent out to labels at the time. And then finally heard back from REX Records. And then that all happened pretty quick. So, yeah, we were recording Struggle in 93, I think.
Yeah, Wikipedia says Jeff Ballou produced that record?
He did.
He did.
He did, which was, like, mind-blowing for us at the time. I mean, trying to think. I think we played Cornerstone Festival before we got signed. And, I mean, I was a Crucified fan, like, diehard. Like, man, that was it for me. Because I actually saw Crucified, like, in when they were, man, it would have been, like, 87, 88. And I saw them for the first time, and I was, you know, I was in high school, and I was just like, ah, oh, this is so great. And kind of got to know those guys just through that festival. And I think REX helped hook that up with Jeff Ballou. Because I didn't know him that well. I was like real like, Jeff's coming to produce this record. Holy crap. You know, like it was awesome. And yeah, it was a good time.
I'm curious about what the scene was like for you guys in Ohio and then just in the area. I know I just found this out this weekend that you produced All Else Failed. So you guys...
And Zayo was super new then.
Yeah.
I mean, we met those guys. They were like super green, you know, like just like super excited. And 6 Feet Deep was kind of established. So they asked me to do it. And they're from Parkersburg, West Virginia, which is like 4 or 5 hours from here. And they were recording up in Cleveland. So it was kind of cool. We just hung out all week and made music. But as far as like the scene, I don't know, the hardcore scene here in Cleveland. I mean, Integrity, you familiar with Integrity?
Yeah. All right.
Like they were on top of their game then, you know, like, man, it was real good. And the scene kind of revolved around them. There was a lot of Cleveland hardcore bands, but I mean, Integrity was kind of like top of the heap, you know, king of the castle kind of thing. And it was a cool time because all the hardcore shows were like real DIY, you know, put on by kids and all day long, you know what I mean? A million bands and real, everybody's real supportive and positive for the most part, you know. Cleveland's always been a little bit of a tough town, you know, there was pockets of, you know, some scary stuff, but for the most part, it was real, you know, everybody was real supportive of each other. And we wanted to be part of that, you know, and helping put on shows and playing out as much as we could and stuff. So
you guys weren't like pigeonholed or ostracized for being a Christian band in any way?
Probably
not
a little
locally.
Bit.
Maybe a little bit.
Probably
yeah.
A little bit, but I mean, you're gonna get that. It didn't faze us if it was happening, you know.
Yeah.
There wasn't really any confrontation about it. I mean, maybe a little eye rolling here and there, but that's about it, you know. There was a big straight edge scene then too here, so you know, it kind of seemed like, you know, everybody had their agendas and was just like pushing their message, you know. It's kind of even keeled over everybody.
So Road Less Traveled, you guys had some member changes. Brian Gray came in. He was playing bass.
That record was a mess, kind of. Matt Traxler joined before then. And I just remember trying to hold this together. You know, we had written like half the record, went and recorded half the record. Then everything kind of shifted and all the members changed. And then wrote the second half of the record. And if you look at the credits on that record, it's a little embarrassing because I just like, I credited everybody with what they did because it was so disjointed. You know, I felt like it kind of had to be like, at the time I kind of felt like, you know, I kind of got to tell this story somehow, you know,
because
it was real, real disjointed. At the time REX was going under and I mean, Road Less Traveled came out on 3 different labels over its, you know, it's that 1 year. Flying Tart Records was like the subsidiary of REX. Mm-hmm. REX went under. REX took it over, changed the cover. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. They, know.
They,
No.
They took the cover art and then they just replaced it with like this picture of me with like moth wings or something really stupid.
Yeah, that's the CD I have.
I was furious. I remember they sent it to me and I got it in the mail and I looked at it and I was like, what is this? I was on the phone so fast. There's nothing I could do. They were already pressed. I was so mad. And then they went under and it got picked up by some Chicago label called Platinum Entertainment or something. And they were selling it for a while. And then some other smaller label repressed it. I don't know. I was out of the loop on all of that stuff. So it was kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, I got to say, listening back to that record, I was listening through your discography, through all the bands, and listening...
Oh. Wow, sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
Listening to Letterbox, and then going backwards and listening to Road Less Traveled, like, you can hear the transition. Right. Like, you can hear, the guitar work, the riffage, how it's similar. Whether that's credit to Traxler, you, or...
I think that, I mean, obviously 6 Feet Deep came to an end not that long after Road Less Traveled, and that had to do with obviously the all the stuff that happened, member changes, and I mean, by the time we got done recording that record, it was the original band again.
Yeah.
So it switched around. It had to do with that, and it had to do with me. I don't know what word to use, evolving or changing musically. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I felt like I needed to do more musically and that wasn't necessarily jiving with where that band wanted to go as a whole. And, Letterbox pretty much, I wrote sitting in my bedroom, you know, in the through the tail end of 6 Feet Deep Falling Apart. That's where those songs came from. So
then Branson starts.
'96. Yeah.
So Letterbox was originally Steadfast put that out, right?
Right. And Steadfast was Matt Traxler's label. Yeah. It started out kind of just as a distro. You know, that's what everybody was doing. He'd go to shows and set up, you know, his boxes of records and then he started pressing stuff himself and like the Zao Overcome stuff and put out a compilation, bunch of bands on that and stuff. So yeah, at the time, we didn't have any label interest or anything. And it was really just Branson at that time was just kind of a thing I was doing. We didn't have to put a band together. I wrote some songs and my good friend Jared was playing drums in another band. I asked him to play drums on, like I was going to record 5 or 6 songs and, asked him to play drums on them. So he did. And we were just going to put an EP on Steadfast. And by the time that was going to happen, 6 Feet Deep was kind of done, completely done. Everybody kind of moved on from it. And we were like, what are we going to do now? So I was like, do you want to be in this band? And Matt's like, yeah. And I asked Jared, I was like, do you want to play with this band? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, we need a bass player. And Matt's like, I know a guy, this guy John, I could ask him. We're like, all right. So he did. John came and played with us at a practice one day. And then we said, all right. So we wrote like 5 more songs, went and recorded them, and then just put out that as a full length, the 2 sessions. And that was Letterbox. I cry, the rain beating down on my face as I try to swallow.
trying to look at the timeline here. Did you put out Let's Call It a Day and Deep Elm picked up Holly Park from that, or or did you submit that?
After we recorded and pressed Letterbox on Steadfast, we started sending it out to labels. And we were friends with Jeff Cloud from Velvet Blue, and before we had really locked anything in with Deep Elm, we had worked out doing a 7-inch with him. Trying to remember how it all kind of runs together. So I think we recorded that around, I think Deep Elm may have actually paid for the recording because he wanted to use one of the songs for his Emo Diaries, A Million Miles Away compilation or whatever.
Yeah, Volume 2, yeah.
Yeah, and we recorded it somewhere out by Toledo, Ohio, in this garage. And songs went to Velvet Blue, and Jeff pressed the 7-inch, and then Holly Park off of that went to the comp on Deep Elm. And then I think just right after that is when we worked out, when we signed to Deep Elm, and then he re-released Letterbox. John Such on Deep Elm released Letterbox. In 98, I think, was the re-release.
What was it like being on Deep Elm? Because at that time when you signed, I mean, you had the Appleseed cast as label mates, and Benton Falls super cool. Wasn't far behind.
I mean, it was real exciting. I felt like we got super lucky, you know, because we sent out a few CDs, and then John was just like, all right, we're doing this. And we're like, yeah, you know. And I mean, it just made such a huge difference to have a label behind you, you know. And then it was obviously super great for us because John, when I say John now on Deep Elm, it's John Such. He's the owner operator of Deep Elm. And John was real into, you know, just DIY networking for booking tours and stuff like that. So like in 98, he, you know, with his help, we planned a 2.5-month tour together, us and Appleseed, like round the country twice, you know, and he really was instrumental in making that happen, which was super great, you know. And then Deep Elm had been around enough to where there were, you know, there was like a built-in, you know, group of people that knew about it. So, I mean, just to be, you know, like up in the Pacific Northwest and people are coming to the shows was mind-blowing at the time, you know, super cool. Yeah, and then, of course, we were working on the next record at the same time, that's what we wanted to do. We just wanted to keep writing music.
Yeah.
So, you know, we knew it was so satisfying to, you know, it's always satisfying to work on music knowing that it's going to get released, you know what I mean, versus just hope somebody hears this someday, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah.
That's great. I remember the first time I saw you guys live. It was either just before or just after Trying to Figure Each Other Out came out. And I saw you just
around 2000.
Yeah, 99 or something, 2000. Yeah. And it was like some small church just outside of DC somewhere. And I remember the thing I remember about it is I went with a friend of mine, and some of the opening bands were playing, and she just looked around and she was like, the big pants are here, because it was the transition from the JNCOs to the skinny jeans.
Right, right.
She's like, oh, the big pants are here.
That's funny. Right, it was right, a great Was that us?
No, that was not you guys, no.
Yeah, I don't think so. I wouldn't have doubted it. We were, you know, that was a few years earlier for us.
Yeah. for all of us.
Right, right. That's funny. We'll be right back.
eventually you signed a militia group.
I did. Let's see, 2004-ish. Deep Elm was great in a lot of ways. Frustrating for us because by the time we were getting to the end of our contract with Deep Elm, we just had worked so hard and for so long, and we needed a step forward, and it just wasn't going to happen there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing we did on Deep Elm, we recorded an EP called Death and Taxes, yeah. And that was kind of like the songs to fulfill the contract. And man, I'm trying to remember how the militia group thing even came about. I mean, we were friends with Chad for a long time before that. I think Matt Traxler was instrumental in just kind of all the communications there.
Yeah.
I just remember getting the news that it might happen and super stoked, super stoked. And when it finally did happen, it was like the greatest thing. I mean, they treated us really well. We had a bigger budget to record Send Us a Signal than we'd ever had. I mean, we were always recording full-length albums on Deep Elm in like 5 days, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like in there, get these songs down, we're gone. And I mean, Militia Group was super cool. They let us do what we wanted and put the money up to give us the studio time we needed, and treated us super great. So it was awesome. And I think it shows in that record. I think if you look at the Branson catalog, I mean, obviously that's the record that probably people are most drawn to. I don't know, maybe not. But I think it shows in the quality of the work.
I think it does. I think most people agree that that record is flawless. Your name came up in the, there's an old school Tooth and Nail Facebook page. And somebody the other day was like, hey, anybody remember that band? Branson.
That's awesome.
A lot of people were talking about that record as
being
a flawless record.
Oh, that's super cool.
With great songs.
That's really, really nice to
say. And the re-recorded version of Blind Spot is just fantastic on Send Us a Signal. I love it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Curious. This is a question that Tom Mullen over at Washed Up Emo, his podcast, asked a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how you guys felt about that label, Emo. If that was something you ever got pegged with, on Deep Elm, and how you felt about it.
I remember, like, as early on as, you know, 98, when we put that song out on the Emo Diaries,
yeah.
I remember we were like, oh, boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That then it was like, here we go. And then of course you'd obviously try and dodge it. You know what I mean? You didn't want to be pigeonholed as, you know, because emo turned into this thing where it could be so many different things.
Yeah.
And you know, it just was a tongue in cheek joke half the time. And like emo for me was like a positive thing early on, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate, mm-hmm. Mineral, those felt like emo bands to me, like in the beginning. And then of course it just got out of control. And now Blink 182 is an emo band. And you're like, what? You know, then you just don't want to say the word emo.
Right.
Ever, you know, it's just like, this is that kind of thing. And then it got to the point where you're just like, whatever, you know, call it whatever you want. You can't change it. You know what I mean? In interviews, how would you go, you know, what kind of band are you? You'd be like, oh, you know, rock band, you know, whatever. Now, when I refer to it, I'm like, yeah, it was kind of just, you know, emo pop stuff, You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's hard to describe it, you know. It's all so spread out now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we didn't like it, but what are you going to do, you know? If I listen to Fallen Star Collection now, yeah, we were an emo band. You know what I mean? There's no doubt about it. I mean, as much as I would like to say we weren't, we were absolutely an emo band.
Yeah.
So, what are you going to do?
Yeah. All right, we got to talk about Hello Control, because I...
Yeah, sure.
Record was a little controversial for fans.
Yeah, everybody hated that record. What's funny about that record is it was our most successful, the most successful record we've ever had that everybody hated.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre. All right, I'll tell you about why it happened. Militia Group, you know, we signed a Militia Group. They threw a bunch of money at Send Us a Signal. Super generous of them. Really grateful. And I don't think the record made the money that they wanted it to make. So I remember we were on tour with Copeland in Japan, and Rory and Chad were there from Militia, and we had a little Branson sit down. and basically they broke the news to us. They were like, guys, we overextended ourselves on Send Us a Signal.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do it again. Like, cause we had a contract for a couple records, you know, and the budget was supposed to go up, and they were like, not going to happen, which was understandable. I mean, you got to run a label and, you know, what happens happens, but they kind of gave us the option and said, if you want to do a second record, we'll give you half the budget of the first one. If you want it. And, at the same time, John, our bass player, had just told us he was quitting. And this, you know, after 11 years, he's like, you know, he'd gotten married, and he was like, it's time for me to do something besides live in this van with you guys. And totally get it. And we were like, man, what are we going to do? And we had been doing it for so long and really kind of felt like, man, it's hard to explain, but we're all getting older. We were all in our mid-30s at the time, you know, and it's like, we can't do this forever, you know? It's just not realistic for us anyway to just keep doing what we're doing. So we were like, we got to take some chances. So we did. We kind of approached Hello Control like that. Like, let's just do something different. Let's do something that we want to do and make different decisions, because we kind of felt like we were making the same decisions year after year after year after year, and really just kind of not getting anywhere. And when I say getting anywhere, I don't just mean like financially, but that was part of it, you know, like getting older and thinking about what we're going to do with our time and our lives. We needed it to either go somewhere or end, you know what I mean? Cause it just wasn't viable to do forever. And, so with half the budget and down one bass player, we're like, all right, let's do this. Let's at least do another record. You know, let's give this one more shot. Cause we kind of looked at things in years and albums, you know, we're like, let's do one more. Do one more record. Let's tour the crap out of it and see what happens. So we needed a bass player, and our good friend Adam, who was in another band called Furnace Street, they were kind of like this electronic duo. We had to have him, because he's like, we've always played music with our good friends. You know, we've never like, oh, open auditions for bass players. It's always been like, who do we know that can be in our band right now? So we begged Adam to do it, and he was a little reluctant, but he eventually agreed, and we started writing. And this was in the days of like when recording music at home on your computer was just kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was new.
You know what I mean? It was kind of a new thing. So we were demoing all these songs, you know, like in GarageBand at home, and having so much fun with it. And what year was this? 2005, 2006. So we were into like, who was big then, you know, like Franz Ferdinand, yeah, and all those like dance rock bands.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'll be honest, I was into it. Like, I thought those bands were great. And we kind of were just feeling that vibe and just started writing. Anyway, the record, we went and recorded it in a couple weeks. And one of the decisions we made that I regret, and the only reason we made this decision was because we were like trying to do things different than we had.
Yeah.
We recorded the album with Ed Rose at Black Lodge in Kansas. That's where we recorded everything after Fallen Star Collections. But we had somebody else mix it. Because we had the opportunity to have the guy that mixed Let Go by Not a Surf, which I love that album. The guy that mixed that, we had the opportunity, he was going to mix our record. And we're like, all right, well, we're making that decision. In hindsight, I wish we would have had Ed Rose mix it. I think it would have fit in more with Send Us a Signal if he had.
Yeah.
Because it was a totally different approach. But not only that, the songs as well. The other mistake I think we made was, I think we loaded the album too like poppy up at the front.
Yeah.
Because I think there's some really like good Branson tracks in the second half. They just, nobody like that was a Branson fan made it that far. Yeah. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like, I'm talking about it like this, being kind of funny. There's a lot of, on that record that I'm really proud of. Some other things, whatever, not so much. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But what's funny about it is that year we that song Nobody Dances Anymore, yep, and the song Earthquakes and Sharks were like hits. Like, we got on MTV for this ridiculous television show, but those songs got us there. And San Diego, a big radio station in San Diego, was playing the Earthquakes and Sharks like crazy, and they invited us out there, and we did this big like radio concert on the beach there on Mission Beach. And like, Sony had like flown up, an A&R guy from Sony flew out here and like was like taking us to dinner and like talking to him, all these big plans. I mean, it was like all this stuff was like happening on the business end of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, on like the you know, things were taking off in one sense, but then we were getting so much crap from people that had been with us for a long time. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that. Other than, I don't know. I'm kind of glad we just didn't keep putting out the same record for another 3 years in one way. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of bands get stuck in that. At the same time, who knows? You know, maybe that's the way we should have gone, but we didn't. No regrets.
Yeah. Again, I listened to it again this morning, and it's like, yeah, there are some really enjoyable tracks on there. And even like, Earthquakes and Sharks. It's like, it's
right,
kind of
a
ridiculous
song,
but it's like, it is a fun, catchy pop song. Yeah, it's...
Showed me around and said to call him Joe. I was there about a week or so. Wound up in the general hospital. Joe said, "Don't drink the water no more." How the hell was I supposed to know?
It's hard to tell from where I sit, like what people really think about that record. So you just hear pieces. You know what I mean? You hear people give you a hard time about it, and other people like love it, and you're like, "All right, whatever. What are you gonna do?" But by the end of that year, this was 2006, it was a crazy year because we did all that stuff that I described and everything was going really well. We toured like crazy that year. We must have been gone for more than 6 months of that year on the road. And all of that was going on. And by the time we got home in December, it had all just fizzled out. Sony had passed on us. The radio play went down. Nothing was happening, you know, and then we just got home and it was like, oh, I guess we need to find jobs. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was just kind of, it was kind of obvious to us at that point that we did what we set out to do. We did it one more time. You know what I mean? We did another year. We worked our butts off and we just kind of like parked the van and went our separate ways for a while. I think we did our last show in Cleveland. I think it was February of 2007. Down to him and swore, you son of a bitch, I told you so. Earthquakes and sharks will start us off. If chupacabras ain't enough, black widow spiders and killer bees. There ain't no shade, there ain't no trees. Got desert heat and polluted air and traffic chains beyond compare. That's all I got to warn about Mexico.
I'm curious about Branston as a band who kind of played not the faith element of the band, but you guys were always at Purple Door and Cornerstone and
it's funny because we just got invited like it just after we put Branston together and it was like the reverberation from the 6 Feet Deep days. It had just, you know, rippled through the whole thing and we would just get invited to these festivals all the time. And it was great. You know, we enjoyed playing them all the time, you know, and we had so many friends, you know, we were, even when we toured the country, we were kind of like pulled into that, not unwillingly, we were like, yeah, great. This is our connection here. Let's go do the show. You know, so, but we always just approached Branston as a, just playing music. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
cool.
I mean, I don't know if that answered your question or.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So post Branston, you guys minus Jared plus John, was it Swarm of,
what's it? Swarm of Bats.
Yeah. Swarm of Bats. Take back the airwaves. We got a
the favorite band I was ever in, only because like I think that we were so tired of like trying with Branston, you know what I mean, like you do something long enough and it became an element of trying. Mm-hmm. Like we're trying to do something, you know, we're trying to push this project or this band somewhere. And Swarm of Bats was just because we were home and we got bored not playing music. So it was just like, you guys want to start a band? Yeah. And then it was just straight fun from there on out. We just got together every week, wrote a bunch of songs, played a bunch of shows, recorded a record, and like it was just no pressure, no expectations, just super fun. So we did that. I think it was, I remember we were playing shows in 2010. I think we did it like 2009, 2010. That was kind of the Swarm of Bats era. And then I think the next year we spent recording another Swarm of Bats record that we never really put out. We just spent a lot of time recording at home for something to do. So, yeah. And I don't know. Matt recently started up Steadfast Records again.
Yeah.
But the website's up, steadfastrecords.net. Really great website. And he put up all his old catalog, like some stuff for sale and a bunch of streaming and stuff. But that Swarm of Bats record is up there. You can listen to it if you're ever curious.
Yeah, I downloaded it off Bandcamp the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It's interesting. It is straight up garage rock. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Super fun for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different. In that, it came up in that Tooth and Nail post about Branston.
Oh, yeah.
And people were like, it's not that great. And I was like,
right.
Well, yeah, if you listen to it and like want the next Branston record, then yeah, it's not going to be the same.
Right. Which for some reason we just can't I don't know. We just got to follow our gut on this stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was just all, it was just fun, you know?
Yeah.
We do shows and set up projectors and like just have all kinds of fun. Broke my favorite guitar at a Swarmback show. Anyway.
Right, which brings us to Golden Streets of Paradise, the new project.
Streets of Paradise is Adam and myself, and it's funny because I think the reason that we started making music just the two of us is because at the time, which 2000 like late 2013, at that moment in time, Adam and I were like the only ones out of our friends that wanted to start a band.
Yeah.
So instead of like sensible people saying, well, we need to find a bass player and we need to find another guitar player, we were just like, we can do this. So we just started making music, the two of us, and really started like loving that whole writing relationship thing. So that's kind of how that was born, and we're still doing it. We just put out we recorded an EP in 2014, and then started working on a full length, and just put that out on vinyl on Steadfast just this last couple months.
Yep.
So
yeah, I got good. Yeah. Got a cassette tape over there of it.
Oh, you got the cassette?
Yeah, from Traxler.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which is a whole other ridiculous thing that's
thing happening.
Now. Cassettes.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Yep.
It's cheaper than vinyl, so.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
What's next for Golden Streets of Paradise?
It's a good question. We're talking about making another record because that's just kind of what we do. I feel like that's my whole life. Like, Adam and I, neither of us are married. Neither of us have any kids. So we kind of got time on our hands. And we'll just start writing more music. So we're planning on playing out, as much as we can. We tend to do one or two shows a month, and we just played in Pittsburgh a couple weekends ago, and I don't know if we're going to like try and do any kind of big tour. We've talked about it. It's hard to do it, when you don't have a label behind you.
Yeah.
Right now, to be honest with you, all we're really thinking about is making music and then trying to scrounge some money together to press it so somebody might want to listen to it. That's about it.
Mike, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
We'll be right back. and clear.
As the Story Grows is a part of Lavera Productions.
High five. Make sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss anything, and visit the site at asthestorygrows.com. Visit the Bandcamp link in the notes of this show for free cover songs, some free tunes, and merch. If you like what you heard and would like to help, there's a Patreon link on every episode, or you can look for the dollar sign on the website for one-time donations. If you can't afford to donate, that's totally okay. Tell a friend, and thank you so much for listening today.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.